Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm in the process of manifesting one of my secret dreams for years to speak publicly in English. On the subject that I love the most, spirituality and expansion of consciousness. And oh my God, it's happening right now. Spiritualista. Hi, I'm Amel. I'm a French girl. That's why you're gonna notice this amazing accent. Yes, très français. Les croissants, les baguettes. Coco Chanel.
Zinedine Zidane. La moutarde.
Hassan Chalgomi.
Place de Clichy.
I will try my best to articulate and to speak with all my love and all my heart for you to understand everything I'm gonna share with you. It's episode 72 and it's time to speak in English, yeah? I spent the three last years traveling around the world and speaking English with every person I met, and they really enjoyed the conversation we have together, and they all wanted to listen to my podcast, and you have to see their disappointment every time I told them I'm really sorry my podcast is exclusively in French. But now let's go. The little fishy that I am have to quit his little fishbowl to go straight to the ocean, and I'm so glad to have you here. You can follow me on TikTok or Instagram. Most of the time I speak in French, but I share a lot of memes in English. And if you slide in my DM or comment in English, I will answer to you. So let's go for this first episode in English. I spent the last 5 days in a retreat. I'm actually in Thailand traveling. I'm in the north of the country in Chiang Mai, and I did a tantra retreat at Mahasiddha Yoga, and I truly enjoyed every minute I spent there. We had a lot of talks, lectures, lessons, workshops, exercise. To begin this introduction about tantra, we had three teachers, Radu, Uriel, and Blondine. I wanted to ask a few questions to Blondine. She is absolutely amazing. I love her way to share authentic and powerful notions, principles. If you want to discover Tantra, this episode is made for you. I send a lot of hugs, a lot of love to the other 25 students who shares these 5 days with me. Let's go for this episode. We talked about the difference between eros and sex, how tantra can empower women and men, how to use your creative energy without wasting it, how to transfigure yourself and your man or your woman, and the mysterious power of Shakti and Shiva. I take you with me in my spaceship. Fasten your seatbelt and let's go to another dimension. Hi guys. Actually, I just finished 5 days of a retreat, so life-changing, about Tantra here at Mahasiddha Yoga. And I'm really, really happy to have the opportunity to ask a few questions to Blondine. She's a therapist, a yoga and a tantra teacher here, and co-founder of Mahasiddha Yoga. And I really love her energy. And I really wanted her to talk to you guys about tantra, about sexuality, about all the magical effect tantra can open in your life. Hi, Blondine, how are you today?
Hi, I'm very happy to be here with you. Thank you for the invitation. It's my honor.
So, Blondine, to begin, can you share with us your journey to tantra?
Yes. Now, how much time do you have? Because it can go very long, but I'll try to keep it quick and sweet.
Yes, thank you.
So I was very much of a little religious child, and not my parents, just me. I mean, my parents, they were churchgoers every once in a while, like Christmas maybe, something like that. They were believers in God, so I could talk to them about God. But I would have visions, and I would have, you know, it's like something between religious and spiritual, because the only spiritual place to go to in a tiny little town in Germany with like 3,000 people in it is a church. There was nothing else going on in the 80s. And I grew up in communism, so we were on the east side of Germany, and therefore there was absolutely nothing spiritual going on. So I would go to church as a child without my parents. I just sit there and feel the light and feel just this connection with everything. And at one point I started talking to my mother about God, and I wanted to know her perspective and so on. And she is a very free-spirited lady, even though she's also quite structured and tough and German, but she's very free in her thinking. And she was like, for me, God is love. And when I heard that, I was like, oh, that's really intriguing, because that kind of vibes with me. That's kind of also how I feel it. I don't feel this big guy in the sky or something with a beard. I feel this embrace, this light, this. Now, later on, when I discovered spirituality, I figured out that I actually was experiencing quite some high states as a child, but they were shocking for me, and they were even scaring me at times, that I would just be like, what's happening? I feel ultra awake and aware, and I don't know why, and it's scary, and I don't know what to do. So it would be kind of this. And then I forgot about all about it. As I was a teenager, I was getting into motorcycles and into just, I was a tough little punk kind of motorbike girl. And then I stuck with that for a while. And eventually a friend of mine, when I started studying in Berlin, was getting very much into yoga. And he kept pushing me and he said, you will really love it. And I'm like, there's no way that I love yoga. Stretchy pants and like middle-aged ladies, it's just not for me. It's slow, it's not me. You know me, I'm like rock and roll and punk and, you know, all that stuff and martial arts. And it was like, I swear to you, you just go to this one yoga school one time and you'll fall in love with it. And I said, okay. So I went and I started at a sister school that studies like same lineage basically, right? Back in Berlin, where my best friend is actually still doing yoga, and she was my teacher then. So it was really, really inspiring for me. I went to this initial yoga session, which was a replacement teacher, very insecure, very sweet little lady, but very insecure. And she was just reading from a paper or something about asanas. She was very shy. It was a very, very boring session, but I felt so changed in my heart just from the practice. So I knew, okay, this isn't about the people. This isn't about, I don't know, some guru stuff or something. This is about my practice, right? I'm here, I'm practicing, and I'm feeling something. I know that what this lady is delivering here, that is not impressive, but I know that the practice works. So I immediately started to practice, right? And I went into it, and every day I would be on my yoga mat, and I would bring along friends and just show them, and they would be like, whoa, this feels so good. And some would be like, you're starting to be a bit weird, and so on, the classic thing. But then for me, it was clear. My heart was sold. I knew yoga is the thing, and I just went for it. And within like a year, I started to teach yoga and do all the trainings and so on. Like within the lineage that I'm a part of, the teacher trainings are extremely long and like very, very detailed. Yeah. So you really get like ground, you know, you really get a very, very thorough education. So it took a very long time to actually go through everything. But I started teaching already as I went on, and yeah, I just knew this is my passion, this is doing me so well. Of course, I was also hitting a lot of spots inside that I didn't know I have, just trauma, and just, I mean, I had a very beautiful upbringing, but my parents divorced, and that was really hard for me, and these kinds of things started to come up. But I noticed, well, I can transform through this and I can heal myself through the practice, right? So yeah, I just discovered it, the yoga and the tantra as a tool to really know myself and on the way heal myself. And then also discover just a version of me that I didn't know even existed. Mm. I was very sure that I know who I am. I was like this confident biker and that's who I am and that's who I will always be. And then I was discovering, wow, but I have a soul and I have like a supramental. What does that even mean? And I started to discover this and then I started to open up to being kind of mystified by life and by my own being as well.
Nice.
Just in a nutshell.
I know a lot of girls who do yoga. I did yoga during a long time, but I didn't took this bridge that link yoga to tantra. How it was for you?
Yes. So I actually really hit the jackpot because I, as I just told you, was never interested in yoga whatsoever. It was not on my radar at all. And if this friend of mine, whom I trusted to know my taste, kind of, wouldn't have recommended me to go to this very specific course, I would never have gone. And that course was a yoga course, but it was based on tantric principles, quite similar to what we were doing in the retreat here, yeah. Right? Which is just basically a ton of awareness, right? We think sometimes of tantra, okay, you were doing naked yoga or whatnot. Just being aware. So I was immersed into that from the very first second I got in contact with yoga. And then later on, I was not trying around too much, but here and there in a festival or something where I would be teaching, I would try something out. And I noticed, whoa, if I would have found yoga in this style, even though I can see that it's nice for other people, but it would not have touched me. It would have not been enough for me. Mm-hmm. And I realized that actually for me, the yoga practice is beautiful because it is tantric. So because it is done with this total immersion into my own being and really going into the mystery of who I am and what life is and to kind of face that every day on the yoga mat, right? Like every day to sit with the mystery of my own being, which is kind of even dreadful sometimes, yes. You know, to sit there to be like, whoa, okay. There's an abyss inside and there's heavens inside and there's everything inside. But I mean, this is what makes it a mystical path, right?
Before I came here, I know nothing about tantra. You know, I have few, you know, images in my brain like that, but what I discover here is so pure, so precise. That's the real thing. It's like I waited so long to connect to that knowledge, but at the same time, I feel that it's the right moment. Mm-hmm. And can you please, Blondine, share with us, what is tantra?
Yes, you're giving me all the questions
in 1 minute.
Yeah, that I would need like a week to answer. 5 days we just did, right?
I know, 5 days and it's just the premise, the beginning.
That's right. But I will do my best. Okay,
thanks.
So tantra, I love how one of my teachers will say it. He will say, tantra is the science of life. And that's just so to the point. But of course, it could also mean 1 million things, right?
Yeah.
So, but what he means when he says that is, tantra is an attempt in the knowledge part to study the workings of the universe and to understand life itself, let's say, not only from the physical perspective, which is something that, of course, science is covering wonderfully, but also from the subtle perspective. So also from the perspective of thoughts and feelings, which is something that in science we would put into psychology, yeah. Right? And then even deeper than that, also from a spiritual perspective, right? And then tantra really looks upon all these different areas of life as this interwoven fabric of creation. And for me, this really always spoke to me because one thing that I found difficult, for example, in church was that I had this feeling that there's this vision that God is somehow up there, out there, up there, somewhere else than me.
Far from you.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this was not my experience. My experience was that God was so striking into my face, God as in the all-existent everythingness, was so striking that it would be scary how close it is. It would be striking to me how much the grass seems to be so immersed with life, with existence. I am immersed in life, existence. My parents are. The love between us is, right? So when I came across this idea in Tantra that actually everything is looked upon as this interwoven reality that all together is what we might call God, or we might call Paramashiva, or whatever name you want to slap onto it. But the point is, there's one unified existence, and that one unified existence is godly. And I was like, okay, but this is what I'm experiencing. So this just fits right into, it's right up my alley, right? So then as I studied more, I started to notice that in the historical sense, tantrics would always be on the outskirts of society. They would always be edgy. And then I noticed, well, actually not even just tantrics, but anyone who's actually going really the full spiritual path, they will be scrutinized at one point. And I was studying the life of saints in India, the life of saints in Europe, and just looking into this and noticing that, so there's something about really allowing to discover the godliness of one's own being and everybody around and life itself that is very scary to society. And it's a scary concept. And I started to notice this also with people in my life. Like, my family trusts me by now that I'm doing things that make me happy, but they were worried. They were like, what are you doing? It seems like you really center your whole life around spirituality now. And I was like, yeah, because I discovered that life is spiritual. It's a spiritual journey. And the work that I do, I want to be oriented towards that. And the love relationships I have, I want to be oriented towards that. And my relationship that I have with my family, I want to be oriented towards that. Initially, that was really hard for my family to take. But eventually, they noticed, oh, actually, we are having a better relationship now. It's deeper. We go much more into essence together. And they can notice that I'm more in contact with myself, and therefore I'm more in contact with them, right? But when I noticed this, I was like, this is really interesting about Tantra, that it's so edgy all the time. And I think nowadays, this is a bit the misunderstanding, that it's like, if you do something edgy on purpose, that's Tantra. But that's not Tantra. It's when you are so in love with the godliness of life that you look a little cuckoo bananas to the other people. It's more this way around, you know? Because I noticed then, checking out other Tantra schools and so on, I was like, guys, you're just being purposefully edgy, right? Oh. You're just trying to push everybody's buttons on purpose, which, fair enough, you know, that's also a practice, yes, to notice the buttons that we have, fair enough. But I noticed, I really like this traditional approach of Tantra, which is like, you just let go of the judgments that might come your way, and you completely dedicate yourself to the truth of life, really, to really find that. And in the process, people will have opinions, that's for sure.
Do you think that Tantra is for the badass spirituals?
I would say sainthood is for the badass spiritual people. Tantra, this is what I love about it. You can be a badass and do Tantra, and you can be the cutest sweetie and do Tantra, at least to a certain extent, right? So I think it was the Buddha actually who said the path, the spiritual path, it's good in the beginning, it's good in the middle, and it's good in the end. Mm-hmm. And this makes a lot of sense. Basically what he's saying is, if it's a true spiritual path, it will be good for you always, you know? So this is what I love about Tantra, is you can start where you're at and then implement the ideas and the practices that fit you. And yeah, you might not become the full-on badass, you know, crazy tantric up on the mountain or whatever you're doing there, or, you know, rocking life hard, but you will find something that's good for you. May that be just living a more relaxed life, or may that be just being more attuned with your soul to what you're doing, let's say, in your job. Or may that be just having more fulfilling love life, or may that be that you're more dedicated to the good aspects of a relationship, and so on. So you can really bring a lot of the practical elements into your life. Mm-hmm. And Tantra is kind of known to be that. You don't need to go to the monastery to practice Tantra. Not that there's anything wrong with the monastery, but you don't need to lock yourself away. You can do something right now. And then as you kind of perfect your life and you become more peaceful and you become more yourself, you might discover that you want more of that. Okay, so maybe you ramp up your practice a bit, right? And yeah, at one point, maybe you become a badass practitioner who does some 4, 5, 6 hours of practice per day, like most of the people who live in the ashram here yeah. are doing, right?
Yeah, what I mean with badass is that in this society, you know, like doing tantra is consciousness. It's connect to yourself. It's act slowly, take your time. Mm. I think it's badass because you do like the reverse thing than, you know, yes. other people are doing. And it, you need like a lot of energy to do that, to yeah. say, oh no, it's not my thing. I prefer this way.
Absolutely. I don't think you can practice tantra unless you're very discerning in what you want.
Yeah.
And there's two reasons for that. And I've noticed that both of them, they happen quite frequently. It could be that you will have difficulty just to say no to the ways of society and then choose the ways that you have experienced in your own being are true, right?
Yeah.
That's difficult for sure. And everybody who's really serious about any spiritual path will hit that point. But in Tantra, the delicate thing is as well that you need to be discerning as you walk the path. And I noticed that for some people, it's like, it's kind of cool to do Tantra, or it's like, you know, there's maybe a social aspect to it, or it's like, ooh, I'm feeling a little naughty and therefore I want to do some Tantra or something. And then they get themselves into real trouble. You know, they will end up in relationships that are not good for them. They will do sexual things that they don't want to do. They will give up parts of their life that they shouldn't be giving up, right? Just for the sake of kind of belonging to the tantric community, in air quotes.
Okay.
Because there is no such thing as a tantric community for real.
Mm.
There is little communities all over the world that practice truthful spirituality. And if you find yourself such a community, it can be a big support to your path. But if you come into any kind of major, you know, group think kind of thing that you and your heart haven't checked upon, please beware. Don't ever do that. And it happens so easily, not only in tantric communities, but just the new agey style of community kind of induces that. And it's like, oh, we are all so free. So we all have sex with each other and we are miserable. Yeah, that doesn't work. If you feel in your heart a calling to be with several people and have a very beautiful polyamorous lifestyle, please suit yourself, right? But don't ever roll with things just because you think it's cool or just because you think that this is how it is to be a tantric or yeah. whatever the label might be. And this is why I love so much this quote that my teacher would always use, which is, as the tree is known by its fruits and humans are known by their actions, a tantric is known by the inner state.
Yeah.
And if your inner state is not aligned towards becoming more and more conscious, more and more blissful, more and more infused with meaning, then you're not practicing tantra. It doesn't matter what you're mm-hmm. doing on the outside, right?
Thank you for this warning, this disclaimer. It's really important.
Yeah.
Can you please explain to us, Blandine, how tantra teachings and practices and everything can empower women and men?
I think something that society is starting to discover at the moment is that we were going through this patch of maybe like 40 years of kind of trying to figure out the whole equality thing, right? And we had a very positive movement, which is everybody discovering that they can make their choices in their lives, right? If a man feels a calling to work with children, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, right? If a woman feels the calling to become an engineer, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. And we were probably much more boxed in our thinking before this period where we kind of allowed ourselves to think a little bit out of the box. But now what we are doing is we're kind of driving it to an extreme, where people start to notice that they feel even, I noticed this in my clients as a psychologist, that people feel kind of bullied into some kind of visionary equality groupthink that they just don't feel in their hearts. And I noticed that this is both for men and women very, very difficult. I noticed that women are even sometimes a bit ashamed to say, I love being a woman. I love feeling feminine. I love being sensual. I love how my body looks in beautiful clothing or I love to put makeup or to not put makeup, but look beautiful in whatever way I feel beautiful, right? And that there's some kind of rejection towards just the beauty of the feminine, for yes. example, or the tenderness of the feminine, the kindness of the feminine, the grace of the feminine, right? As if we say yes to that, we would say no to the intelligence of the feminine, the wisdom, the courage, the strength of the feminine, right? Yes. And I feel what Tantra does, it simplifies things without making it banal, because Tantra is about the obvious. It is about what works. It is about how the universe really is. It doesn't make speculations, right? And I feel this is such a breath of fresh air Absolutely. For the modern person, right? Yeah. And this is what I noticed when I bring women together in women groups or in retreats or something like that. And for example, I just tell them, like one of the exercises that we might be doing is I just tell them, just feel yourself and see how you feel to move and just have your eyes closed, right? So everybody has their eyes closed and the women just move how they feel to move. Yes. And some of them, they're like, they jump around like children, and some are like really like grounded and, you know, getting into this kind of movement, like really oomphy kind of yes. movements, and others are super refined and kind of ballerina style or something. But when I take a look around the room, what I see is feminine beauty. Because yeah. it's so simple. It's like you have it in your heart. Just express how you feel. It's so simple, yes. right? And I feel this is something really beautiful that I've seen for women, that taking the courage of rediscovering who you are as a woman mm-hmm. and to understand, well, clearly I was born into this body, so this is part of my destiny, mm-hmm. to deal with this, right? And this also means to be triggered by my own body and to learn to love my own body mm-hmm. and to go through what it means to being a woman and to accepting that in its essence, mm-hmm. right? Not in some stereotype. And I feel that this kind of can bring women a new grounding, because I feel what I find really the bad parts of feminism is that women were kind of just told this is not good, but it wasn't told what is good in a way, right?
Yes.
So we were then kind of like, oh, you know, maybe I should be a girl boss and have a career and so on. And for some women that is true, but for most women, they need to discover something about mm-hmm. themselves first to really know where to place themselves. Mm-hmm. And I feel Tantra really allows for that to happen. And what I've seen with men is something, it's basically the exact same principle, but it maybe shows itself in an even more striking way. I initially was working way more with women. I started my teachings actually for women only when I started to be a teacher, like 1 year into my path. I was only working with women. It was very fulfilling for me. It was a beautiful exchange. I learned a lot about myself and accepting myself and so forth. And then after some years, I started to have also mixed classes. And then even sometimes I would take like be a replacement teacher for a men's group in the yoga center where I was working and so on. And what was so striking for me is how somehow the movement of feminism has left men in an equally confused spot.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So it's kind of like, okay, ladies, we want to be good for you, for sure. And in the past, some of the stuff has definitely gone a bit into a direction that is maybe not the most favorable for you. Also, by the way, you know, we have been creating the past also together, right? It's not just, oh my God, the guys, they did something awful. No, it was just certain things were not yet so understood. Now we understand them together. So let's do something with it together. But the guys are kind of sitting there and they're just like, okay, I don't want to be an asshole, right? I don't want to be nasty. I don't want to do any of this stuff. But I do love women, and I want to be able to approach them and maybe even pursue them in the way that is good for them and that is inspiring to them and that they feel safe. And I just don't know how to do that. It's just, yeah. I have no footing. I have no grounding. And we have kind of, I feel we really have failed to teach society how to deal with this. Mm-hmm. And how to not just say what is bad, but to say what is good, what is the good way, right? And I do relate this a lot to, for example, when you look at children's upbringing, right? If you have a child that is only told no and never taught how to do it right, that child will end up to be really kind of like crippled in their mind.
Yes.
You know, because
they
will not have an availability of agency. They will not feel that they know how to do good. They just know how to do bad, and then they don't want to do that, and they end up in this frozen state, right? And I feel this is what men have been kind of really like burdened with in the past like 30 years for sure, and then even more so you see the outcome of that in the generations that are coming of age now, right? And I feel what Tantra can really teach is to reassume the beautiful masculine role that was tailored for you in this universe, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's a reason why there are men in this universe.
Of course.
It always pains my heart, you know, to see these interviews, like these short interviews when you know, an interviewer goes around and asks people on the street, women on the street, do we need men? And they say, no, absolutely not. And I'm always like, wow, what have we taught to our children? What have we taught to our daughters, right? That's just... It lacks kindness and it lacks understanding of how life really works, right? And then what I see with men that actually really get into Tantra for real, they really want to embody that perfected masculine that is caring and that assumes responsibility. This is a man who has purpose and drive and who's not oriented towards pleasure but towards meaning and who's able to discipline himself. And it's like, well, if we can have more of these men, this would be also so good for the women, right?
Yes.
So I feel that
everyone wins.
Yeah, there's only good things to come from this, right?
And I remember, Blondine, during one lesson, we split the group, mm-hmm. the women and the guys and the men. And during this session, you told us that men are a little bit lost in this dimension because women are... vessel of the creation, so we are connected, so we have download and we understand more what happened here, but not for them. And when you told us that, I really felt compassion in my heart for them, and it really blew my mind. And since this moment when I talk to them, I'm really like more caring, I have more tenderness. I try to bring them like little keys to understand, to calm them, say, oh, it's okay, don't worry. More love, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain to us what is the big difference between Shakti and Shiva, between the feminine energy and masculine energy,
mm-hmm.
and their vision?
Yeah. So again, it's a huge subject, right? But I will try to boil it
Thanks.
Down for you. So... the principle Shiva Shakti in Tantra, it's this idea, right, that we have a distinct masculine principle and a distinct feminine principle that build up this universe. But first thing to understand is that Shiva Shakti is actually presented in the sacred scripture of Tantra as one word oftentimes, Shiva Shakti. So it's considered as a union. It's something, these two, they are something that are already unified. Right, so then Shiva Shakti are looked upon as these two sides of one coin, and of course within the world we can look upon this duality in its very distinct expression. So we would say the Shivaic principle is the principle of consciousness, the Shakti principle is the principle of energy, right? And now these two, they play together in all of us, right? Right now we are sitting here, we have a physical body, we see the light come in, all of these are energies, right? Shakti. But we're also conscious with each other. You're asking me questions, right? Clearly we are awake and conscious. So that's Shiva working through us, right? And then within the gender expression man-woman, we would consider a link between the woman and Shakti and the man and Shiva. But of course it's not clear cut, right? It's not the two of us are only Shakti, because then we couldn't talk, right?
Yes.
Then we wouldn't have consciousness,
yeah.
Right? And it's not the Shakti means all the stereotypical female things. I don't know what, the kitchen and makeup and shoes or something. No, I mean, look around you, the world, everything is Shakti, right? So has to be understood at a much broader scale. So what does it then mean that a woman is a representation of Shakti? It is much more that our approach towards finding the unity of these two within our hearts, which exists within our hearts, we will find that as women much rather through the scope, through the perspective of Shakti. We are more, let's say, attuned to that vision of Shakti, and through her we come in contact with Shiva, with consciousness. So women will tend to be, for example, much better in, and this is an average, right? There's always exceptions, but as an average, women will be much better in simply containing energy. And you can see that typically quite well in the bedroom, that a woman can actually experience pleasure in a completely different way that for a man is even difficult to grasp, how that is even possible. And it's fascinating to him, if he's a straight man, right? He will be fascinated by that crazy, intense, mysterious bliss that is coming through her, right? This is something that reminds him of his essence of Shakti that he carries inside. But his viewpoint, his perspective towards that union that is alive in his heart too, is through the vision of Shiva. Mm-hmm. So through the vision of consciousness, of perspective, of being present, of having purpose, and so forth. So when a man is, let's say, faced with a difficult situation, let's say, and he does not manage to be present and directed in that situation, that will typically lead for him to kind of like, it's like an identity crisis. Mm. Whereas when a woman feels lost in a certain crisis situation, she will be able to be like, well, yeah, that was just really hard, right? That was just hard. I just lost it. That was so difficult for me. And as much as she might also blame herself a little bit, she usually has more understanding for herself in it, because she understands the overwhelming nature of life itself.
Exactly. Yes.
And for a man, it's like, yeah, but I should be able to stay present. I should be able to be conscious. And I was not. I weaseled away. I was weak in the corner. I didn't stay alert. I didn't stay clear. And for him, it would be like, wow, like, who am I if I cannot do this?
He loses his self-esteem in this process.
Yes, because his identity is much more aligned with, what am I conscious of? What am I present to? Mm. What am I holding space for with my awareness? When a man has the feeling he cannot hold space for what is going on, he cannot catch it in his awareness, it will tend to shut him down. Mm-hmm. And you can, you know, sometimes in the more stereotypical jokes or something in movies, you will see this kind of how a man, like after a woman starts talking for too long, he just zones out.
Yes.
Or something like that. It's just like, okay, this is too much energy for me to hold in my consciousness, and I'm
close
shutting down. Yes. So these are just some ideas, right? I'm not trying to make it complete, but these are just some ideas.
Yes.
And then very important to understand now that the vision in Tantra is not so much that, oh, you are a man and therefore you will always be like that, and that's just what you are, and you cannot complete yourself or anything like that, and you are a woman and you will never be present and conscious like a man is. It's not at all like that. It's much more to understand, okay, you are coming with a talent, you're coming with a superpower, right? And the woman has a superpower to be in life, to for example, multitasking, right? To hold the baby, and with one hand,
yes,
she's cooking the dinner, and here she talks with the mother exactly on the phone and this and that. And she can kind of manage that, right? So she can actually hold space, be conscious to all of these energies. Why? Because it's in her nature to hold a lot of energy, because she has a lot of energy in her being, right? Whereas for a man, it's much more likely. If you look, for example, into, it's very interesting, if you look into all top jobs in the world, right? Like if someone really went top notch, even on very, very feminine subjects, fashion, art, psychology, the top 1%,
yes,
it will always be guys.
And the chefs, the cooking,
yes,
them,
exactly,
too.
The cuisine,
yeah,
exactly. And we have this strange idea that this is due to some patriarchy and so on and so, but if you actually really observe how these guys operate, a woman would never operate like that. It's like they are selling their entire lives to do this one thing.
Yes.
And I'm happy you mentioned chefs, because indeed chefs is like, it's such a crazy business.
Yeah.
And they burn for it and they focus on it.
It's
and
military.
Yeah. And everything else falls away. So when a man really gets into a subject for real, everything else falls away. He's into that one thing and he dedicates everything he is to that one thing, and he's fully present to that thing and his purpose is directed to that thing. And this is David Data that I'm quoting. He's like a train on train tracks.
That's
and there's
so
no way to derail him. You just choose if you want to be on that train.
Yeah.
But he is going, right? This is the Shivaic principle, the penetrative principle.
I worked a lot with men, and what you describe is absolutely that. Yeah, that's amazing.
And the thing is that there's a beauty in both of these approaches, and actually when we put them together, then we will get a really great outcome. Mm-hmm. So typically if you have a team that is really well put together with competent men and women, you will get a super nice outcome.
Yes.
Because the women will tend to a much more greater variety of details and hold much more space for a variety of energies that need to be taken into consideration. And the guys will be much more driving towards a certain goal and making sure that the entire thing remains over time aligned towards a certain vision and so forth. And this is brilliant, it's beautiful, and it belongs together. And in Tantra, we utilize this to find that union that is anyways alive in each and everybody's heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, for a man, this is a lot about discipline, about kind of reckoning with being in this very alive world and doing something good in it, right? And that is hard work. It's hard, hard work. And it's good to appreciate guys who actually will take the challenge and will say, you know what, I want to grow. I want to dedicate myself to a greater vision of myself, not only of a business, also beautiful, but also of myself. And I want to perfect myself to be a better offering to the world, right?
Exactly.
So beautiful.
To be a better offering for the world. That's so beautiful. And that's exactly what Tantra offer, in fact. Because you have the discipline, the practices, everything. It's not just for yourself, in fact. To spread it, to share it, to make love, to diffuse love. So it's really, really beautiful.
Spiritualista.
I really love the transfiguration process because it connects you to a supreme energy, frequency, vibration. There's something very interesting in this process. It's the fact that you can transfigure your man.
Yes.
And when I was writing the question, I put a frog to a prince. Is it possible, actually, with transfiguration to do that?
Yeah, it's really sweet that you picked this example, because I do believe that in these old times, these stories, oftentimes they sound like, okay, it's just a fairy tale, but I think oftentimes it is symbolism and even kind of like a hidden language to express these kinds of principles, right? It's interesting. There's the frog and she throws him to the wall and he becomes a princess. All of these are very interesting symbolic elements that we could analyze. So yes, indeed, you can, through your transfiguration, help your man to become the not just the prince, but the king, the warrior, the lover, the magician, the super amazing soul that he came here to be. And he can do the same for you through his adoration, through his active looking beyond the apparent and the superficial into your soul. He will inspire you to become the most wonderful mother, the most beautiful lover, the most amazing initiatrix, the most wonderful, fascinating beauty, the most powerful, striking heroine, or whatever is in your soul. He can help you by seeing that in you. And of course, this vision is based on love, right? Only when we open ourselves to each other can we actually see the grandeur of the other one. But it is also something that can be trained, right?
Yes.
I can sit down and actively choose to not just see a beautiful lady in front of me right now, but to see, okay, you are a soul seeking for something, right? You want to bring truth to the world. You're doing a podcast. You're reaching out into the world to bring something good, right? And now I have a very different vision. You're not just a pretty lady, also that, but also all of these other things, right?
Yeah.
And in the moment I look at you in this way, you feel inspired, and you will start to look at me this way, and you will be like, okay, however, whatever Blandine's shape might be, but I see that she is onto something. She wants to bring something good. I can feel her good intentions, right? I can notice her soul coming through. And then the more we kind of ignite each other like it's like letting the lights shine on the planet, really.
That's so beautiful. Transfiguration, it's alchemy, kind of?
Yes, it's part of alchemy. So in Tantra, for example, we study, and this is something that Tantra became famous for in all the wrong ways, which is magic, right? And maybe you've heard about this when
sex magic.
They say sex magic.
Or you don't like sex. Eros magic.
Yes, for sure. And I also don't like the magic, how it is presented. Kind of, if you like, make a quick research on the internet.
It's egotic most of the time.
You will find nothing good. It's like, that's not at all what Tantra is about.
Okay.
There's this, you know, when you spell the magic with the CK in the end.
Oh, yes.
It's like, it's just really a handle with care. And I would not at all suggest to get into this kind of practices that aim to kind of get something for ourselves. Mm. Because there's always, let's say, a temptation to kind of tilt the universe in a way that that will give us something, exactly. Okay. Or that it will kind of underline who we are or strengthen our pride or whatever it might be. Mm. And these things, like the viewpoint is false. This is why it can never work. It can only work temporarily, right? Let's say, you know, there's this big movement of manifestation. I manifest myself something, right? Now, that's all nice. But the thing is, what if the thing that you are manifesting there, it is not aligned with the flow of the universe?
That's
then, you know, you're creating a little manifestation bubble over here.
Yes.
But if the universe is unified, then something will be missing over there.
Right?
So true. My teacher, one of my teachers says, very beautiful. He says, people think abundance is when you have much more than you can use and you have everything you could ever want and you could ever think of. And he says, if you think about it this way, you're stealing from other people.
It's greedy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he says, what abundance really is having exactly what you need in every given moment.
Yeah.
What you need, not necessarily all the stuff that you want, right?
Yes.
Exactly what you need to learn all your lessons. And that's abundance, right? And the universe offers this abundantly. We always have exactly what we need to learn our lessons, especially, you know, people like you and me who live in the abundance of the Western world. There's no need to kind of, you know, draw in more and more stuff to ourselves. So Tantra is very much oriented in its proper form and its traditional form is oriented to understand, but what's my role in the universe, right?
Yeah.
Like you were saying before, how can I offer myself into the world, which will fulfill me? I don't need to worry, right? It's like the universe is so beautifully built. It's like, if I give my gift, I will have everything that I need. It's already taken care of.
Absolutely.
Right.
I love the manifestation process with Ikigai.
Mm-hmm.
What the world needs.
Yes, exactly.
And you have to find like this thin line that, okay, I can offer like all my qualities, my talents to the world, and at the same time I can live with this experience.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, what I really love about the Ikigai is that it gives such a balanced approach. It's a system really based on balance.
Mm.
And I do believe that Tantra is also a system based on balance.
Exactly.
In Tantra, we allow for the intensification of our experiences, but we need to do it within a seeking of balance at all times. So yes, the pie becomes larger, but it remains a balanced pie, so to say.
Yes. And I always think that in a quantic organization, when you are here to serve, there's the consciousness of the people of the future. You're going to help them in the future.
Yeah.
They're helping you in the now.
Totally.
So it gives you energy to do, to achieve that thing.
All the resources that you might need. Exactly.
I want to talk with you about this big difference between sex and eros.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a big subject. I really love the vision in the Tantra that you can use sexuality in your spiritual pathway to connect and to live this moment like meditation in action. and activate, you know, your consciousness, your vision, and maybe receive download or just be like in this blissful moment. How can we transform the vision we have about sex, sexuality, like the education, the porno and everything, the interdiction, and be free to explore the eros?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a big thing and it's a simple thing in the same time. So the shift from sex to eros, it doesn't happen. It's not like, don't think of it like an alchemy from, okay, I take this thing, which is sex, and then I do something to it and it becomes eros. It doesn't work at all like this, but it goes through the creative energy, right? So right now I have in my system creative force, right? I can feel it. I have a certain drive to do things. I have maybe creative ideas. I can feel maybe some bubbling sensations in my hips because I would like to make love or whatever it might be. But right now, creative force is pumping through my system, right? And then in any given moment, I have the choice to either invest this energy downward pointing, meaning pointing towards selfishness, pointing towards instinct, pointing towards addiction, pointing towards separation, pointing towards unconsciousness, right? Or I could take this energy and point it upward, right? And use it for elevation, use it for becoming more conscious, more connected, more loving, more at peace, more into my soul, and. Now, you can imagine it with the words that I used for the downward flow, as it is the unconscious, the instinctual way. If we don't do anything with the creative energy, it will tend to kind of ooze into the lower expression of it, at least in a part, right? And you might have noticed that people, for example, who might be in a very elevated creative mode, yeah, let's say someone who's really creating real art, like very inspiring art, right? They might actually, while they are there for 3 weeks locked into their atelier and painting and I don't know what, they might not have any sexual drive.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything is pouring into their expressions, into their, right?
Yes.
Like that. Or if you are building a business, right? And you come home in the evening, you forgot you even have genitals because you are so invested with your creative force,
yeah.
Right? Now, the more elevated your investment will be, meaning you are balanced, you are relaxed, you're truly inspired, then all that creative force will flow in an erotic way.
Mm-hmm.
And that will mean that you will also come home and actually will feel inspired to be with your beloved in a very elevated and sweet way, even if it's maybe just exchanging some caresses or some looking deep into each other's eyes or whatever it might be. And the more we are investing the creative energy throughout the day in a way that might be tensing, right? We are, okay, we are doing a business, that's great. We are investing something great, but we get so tense. We get anxious about the money. We are overrunning ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We are not eating well. We are not breathing well. And then we come home in the evening and then we might feel like, oh, I just need to get it out of my system, you know?
Yeah.
I just need to maybe masturbate or, you know, just get it out or have a quickie or something.
Yes.
Like this, right? So we have to understand that to achieve eros in our life as opposed to sex, so two words that we coined before,
yes,
we need to address the creative force at large.
Mm.
In the moment we are already down, it's very, very difficult to uplift, right? So once you come home tensed in the evening, you will need to first do something to just realign your creative force. Maybe you take a hot shower, you do some yoga, you do a bit of meditation, you breathe, and then you come together with your lover and first you massage each other. Maybe you have to talk out some things. Maybe you need to rant a bit about your business or whatever, right? So you reset the whole creative energy with even no attempt to anything sexual, anything bedroom style, right? And then once the creative energy is flowing beautifully, it is just natural to uplift into this high form of eros, into this connective, beautiful
mm-hmm.
experience of the bedroom, so to say, or of your love life, right?
Yeah.
So we need to think of it always this way. How am I investing my creative force right now, right? So if I go, let's say I go to the club to hunt someone handsome to spend the night with, the overall approach is already not very elevated,
yes,
right?
It's like,
yeah, it's not connective, it's not loving, it's not conscious, it's not all the things that are with the Eros, right?
It's like predation. It's like you're an animal searching for.
But if you go out to the club and you have no hidden agenda, but you are coming to have a beautiful time, to meet friends, to be at an elevated spirit, you are aligned with love, you know how you want to meet people, then if, let's say, you're making an acquaintance with someone, already you will be dialed towards the correct energy. And you will not even feel, oh yeah, let's just go in the toilet and hump a little. You will not feel that, because you're like, oh, we are connecting. This is about love. This is about togetherness. Mm. And you might sit together and talk the whole night or have a romantic walk or whatever and feel super inspired and super fulfilled, because you're coming already with the correct direction, with the correct ideal.
It's a resonance law. So you're gonna attract like the vibe where you are, and it's automatic.
Exactly. Yeah. And what I notice is, what is difficult for people is they think, okay, when I get to the bedroom, I will do different things than usual, and therefore I will turn from kind of bad sex to good sex, or what we call from sex to Eros, right? And that's just what I'll do. I'll just be very conscious as I bang this lady. It's like, that's not going to work out. It's just not going to happen, right? Because it's a principle. You cannot fool the principle, right? So really keep in mind, Eros happens all the time. Every moment of every day, erotic force is potentially alive in you through your creative force, right? And if that inner attitude of yours, let's say 10 hours per day, is not aligned towards something erotic, it will be very difficult to create something erotic in the bedroom, right? So it's really a shift of perspective, all the time seeking to bring our creative energy into a flow of consciousness, of love, of togetherness, of balance and harmony, and then that will gradually uplift the being to always have this vision. Also in the bedroom, and also behind the desk, and also
always.
That. Yeah.
Do you think that people in power who have a big influence, I think about Jay-Z, Beyoncé, like King and Queens, and do you think that they're not tantra?
I rather believe that they know magic, which I'm not a fan of.
Oh, okay. That's so interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I do believe that from what I can see, just like watching pop culture and also watching politics, observing politics.
Yes.
Some of the moves are too knowledgeable, in my opinion. That, of course, it could be that people are just, you know, having a lucky strike. But if I look, for example, in the symbolism that is used on television, the symbolism that is used in music videos, the symbolism that is used online and in art and so on, it's for me a bit like it's too obviously arranged, right? But it's not elevated.
Mm.
So that tells me you're doing magic
and
you're not doing elevated magic.
That's how we can have discernments between tantra power, tantra enlightenment, and like sex magic. It's the polarity. Does it bring light, love, or it's like to spread confusion, fear? Okay, that's so interesting.
Yeah, and I feel really this law of resonance that we were studying here, it really helps you to understand this. You just ask yourself, how does this vibe?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and of course, you know, beware. Just the entire, let's say, media business that we find on the planet, like all of it, social media, corporate media, whatever, all the medias, the use of it, or, you know, the way it grew, the way it became what it is, it's not super mega elevated. I have a bunch of journalist friends, and I notice it's a hard job. It's a really hard job, and especially because of the climate, you know, like being like in a competition also of bringing the story and bringing something big. And it's like, it just puts you into a certain vibe that it's just, well, it's not nice for your creative energy. That's for sure. Right. And it's a tiring job. It takes a lot of time. It's a lot of effort. You need to be super outgoing and strong, yes, and like that.
And it, violence.
Yeah, it runs people down. It really runs people down. And I noticed this, that friends of mine that attempted, like when we were in school, and then they attempted to go towards journalistic practices, and after 5-10 years they would be like, I think I'm done, it's just too hard.
I stopped my activity as a journalist because during the COVID situation, I was working for a radio station, yeah, Radio France, so yeah, it's a government radio station.
Oh, wow.
So I was in the center of the propaganda.
Wow.
And that's why I created my podcast, because I needed to use my throat chakra for other things,
yeah,
more meaningful. And yes, I totally feel you when you talk about that.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard.
Yeah, it is tough. And then when you know, within that scope, now everything is coming to us through those channels, right?
Yeah.
Also, if an artist that is, you know, more visible, like Beyoncé or whoever,
yeah,
will come through the same channels, will come through the internet, will come through the radio, will come through the television, right? And like, whatever she might be doing on her end, it's already kind of squeezing through the pipes of that kind of frequency, you know? And it's like, it's very difficult to convey something really elevated and pure through,
yes,
these channels. It's possible. Some people manage, but it's really, really the exception. And what I've noticed is the more you can reach a more mainstream, you know, it's not even audience. It's just the feedback that,
yes,
you're getting from the overall societal mainstream. The more you reach that, the less you can be on a very, very high tone, because you're just not vibing, right?
Yes.
It's just, you're just not resonating with what's going on.
Wow. I saw, when you were speaking, I had this vision. I saw like the vessels of lights, and this big corporation, and the tunnel of information, and the platforms, and everything. And it was like dark thing, like going through them.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we have really like these polarities. Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Blondine, can you advise us a few books, movies, studies,
mm-hmm,
that really inspired you in your journey?
Yes, I gladly do that. So I want to go with things that are more related to our subject here, because I'm very widespread in what interests me. But on the tantric front, so I do really like the two books of David Deida, one he wrote for men and one he wrote for women. They're called The Way of the Superior Man and Dear Lover. I'm not saying that each and every word is in a perfect agreement with what I'm saying, but the overall message that he's bringing through, especially making men a bit better understanding the masculine essence and making women understand a bit better the feminine essence, he does a really good job at that, to make it very kind of imaginative. He uses a lot of imagery in his language, and he makes good analogies, and he writes well, and it's very easy to read and to get at least a good overview, right? It's not like the super high-end tantra, but it's such a nice starting point. And I always go back to these two books just because they are so nice in their wording, and I draw inspiration from there in a way of especially teaching beginners. It's just very, very helpful. I do love also two books for men and women, The Multi-Orgasmic Man and The Multi-Orgasmic Woman from Mantak Chia. Is a Taoist book. Again, I will not agree with absolutely everything in there, but it's such a nice practical methodological book. It's just, you start in the beginning and then you read through and you do the exercises in there, and you will have results. And
so you need to have a lover?
No, you can,
okay,
practice also by yourself in,
nice,
this Taoist context. There's a lot of breathing and circling of energies and a,
nice,
lot of good stuff that is really helpful. For women, there are some methods that are so helpful also to overcome difficulties with the menstruation. There's the ovarian breathing and breast massages and all sorts of good things. Very simple, down-to-earth tools, and they can really help. So I really love those two books. I'm personally a big fan of reading inspiring stories of tantric saints. This is very, very, very much striking my heart.
It's a niche. I love it.
It's not for everyone. And I noticed that when sometimes I suggest to my girlfriends, why don't you read this book of this female saint from Tibet or something?
Wow.
And they will start and they will just be like, I cannot read this. This is just completely crazy. I don't even understand what's going on. But I'm a big fan of these books and I would recommend to everybody to read Sky Dancer, which is the biography of Yeshe Zubyal, one of the great Tibetan female saints who was a full-on tantric practitioner.
Whoa.
She was super tough. She would do from full-on lovemaking and all the sexual practices with her beloved, and to sitting for years and years alone in a cave and meditating and doing super tough yoga and breathing and chanting and everything possible. And she became this Dakini, basically, this super
amazing,
accomplished being. Yeah, it's very inspiring. Along the same line is another female saint. She is called Princess Mandarava. She is an Indian saint, and the two of them are known a little bit in connection to each other because they were known to be the two main consorts of a Tibetan saint, a guy called Padmasambhava.
Okay.
Actually, I'm not so sure that he was Tibetan. He just was in Tibet for a while. He also was in India for a while. And he was one of the greatest saints of the area. I think it was around the 14th, 15th century that he was alive. And he was absolutely amazing. I recommend his book as well. It's called The Lotus Born and was actually written by Yeshe Zubyal, one of his consorts. And the other consort, Princess Mandarava, there's a book of hers that is called The Lives and Liberation of Princess Mandarava. And she is also one of these absolutely crazy human beings. She met her guru, Padmasambhava, when she was 13, I believe. And she was just at his feet and praying and taking the teachings and meditating and doing everything. And then when she came of age, they became lovers as well. And they would spend months and months in some high cave somewhere in the Himalayas and practice crazy rituals. And she would become this. She was basically just an incarnated goddess. It was just absolutely outrageous what she was doing.
I have one question, Blondin.
Yeah.
This teaching,
mm-hmm,
they need practice.
Yes.
Like practice.
Yes.
And the practice, you need like teacher.
That's true. Yes.
And so you learn by doing most of the time.
Yes. Yes, you do. But now, not everybody needs to become the consort of a guru to approach Tantra. Very important to understand. It's not a must.
Okay.
But you do need, I would say what you need is a lineage. You need a set of teachings that really lead all the way to liberation fully. The problem is if you are kind of just shopping around, it's very good in the beginning, but you will hit a glass ceiling eventually, right? And then, so what, for example, in these three books that I just spoke about, with these three saints, two women, one man, they have an extremely clear lineage and clear path that they are following, very dedicated, and then they reach all the way into final liberation, enlightenment. And I mean, this is not just I'm enlightened, I'm feeling good in my soul. This is like I can, you know, live by eating stones. It's ridiculous what these guys were doing, but it gives you an understanding of what is possible, right? But now, nowadays, where we are not living in caves,
exactly,
and all of these things, it is enough to have a very clear, let's say, direction towards enlightenment, at least, in order to walk a relatively straight path. And then you will need to find yourself a lineage that works for you, right? So if you feel, I don't know what, you are an inspired Christian, right? Then you would take that route of Christianity and you would maybe go to the monastery and become a nun and marry Jesus and fall in love with God or whatever you do and reach all the way into enlightenment. But it will not be possible for you to go into the monastery and then also to have sex with a priest, right?
It's ascetism.
Yes. You will need to make a clear choice, the lineage that you are into. And as a tantric, if you want to practice also erotic tantra, which is not a must, there's tantric paths that are ascetic, Like, for example, if you want to read a book of an ascetic tantra, it would be the biography of Milarepa. He never had sex with anybody, and he was a full-on tantric. He was flying through the air, and I don't know what. Very, very inspiring. So, but if you choose to do the erotic path, then, well, in time, you will need a lover, eventually. And this should be someone you really love and give your heart and give your soul to. It cannot be done on some kind of casual background. I know that there's other materials out there that suggest otherwise, but I could not agree less. Tantra is done on a background of a dedicated love relationship. Mm-hmm. Very, very clear. And in our lineage, this is super, super clear. There's no such thing as you go there, you pick up your sexual initiation, and then you go your merry way. No, it doesn't exist in our lineage. Yeah. You have dedicated, beautiful, lasting love relationships, no matter if you want to have one or five or however many, but this is the way that you go about it. And then you practice with your lover in accordance with the teachings of Tantra. So this means you cannot I don't know what, ejaculate on Monday and practice Eros on Wednesday, right? It doesn't work. There will need to be a continuity, is what I'm trying to say, right? So it doesn't need to be crazy. You don't need to find yourself an enlightened master and then, you know, try to convince him to become your lover. This is not necessary. But both of you as lovers will need to be dedicated to really fully practice the path, right?
Oh, right.
And then you can reach results, and it's no problem. It's not that both of you first need to, okay, you need a divorce and then be with some tantrics for a while and then come back together. It's not needed. You can train with someone you love and who is dedicated to this path. You can train and you can have good results. There's no doubt about it.
Nice.
There's no doubt about it. It's a little harder, of course,
yeah,
but it's very possible.
Thank you, Blondine. Thank you for this interview. Thank you for your kindness, all your knowledge and your generosity. There is something you want to add before we finish the episode?
Just I want to encourage people to really seek their heart and to be very discerning in your spiritual journey. Actually, this is very, very inspiring for me from the Christian viewpoint, that when a person really wants to enter the religious life, no matter if as a married person or entering the monastery or entering priesthood or whatever it might be, they will really take a lot of time and seek their heart and discern what is good for them and what they want their relationship with God, with the universe, to be like. And I cannot encourage more to really take it serious. Like, the spiritual life is what nourishes our soul. We need to implement it into our lives one way or another. Not each and every one of us will go and live a monastic life, but each and every one of us has a thirst for discovering our soul and for some kind of spiritual inclusion within our lives. And it is really up to you to figure this out. It's not going to just fall on your head. You know, maybe the inspiration falls on your head, but the actual living out of what you want spiritually, it's your responsibility. And it's very important to take that seriously and to take your time to discern what is your path, to discern what is good for you, to try out the practices. Don't believe anything that I've just said. Go practice, find out for yourself, right? Always do that. Take the practices, give it a fair shot, practice for long enough, see the results that come. And the real spiritual practices, they will bring you results. And once they bring you results, your soul will awaken a little more and point you a little further. Okay, now we need this. Okay, then let's dedicate to this. But be discerning, be alert, be awake, be aware. Because what I've been seeing is that spirituality becomes vulgarized into something more social, right? And then a lot of mess happens. A lot of mess happens. People do all sorts of things they don't want to do. Don't ever do that. Spirituality is written in your heart. You know which path to walk. Be courageous. Don't be wimpy about it. Don't be a crybaby about it. If your heart says, walk north, take the path, do the meditation, do it. Trust yourself and understand that it is a profound need of your being to implement spirituality exactly in the way that you need in your heart, right? Tantra is not for everybody, even though it has beautiful aspects for everybody, but maybe it is not your path, and it is up to you to discern that. And Christianity has something beautiful for everybody, maybe it's not your path, and so on and so forth, right? Really find and take your time to find what is good for you. And don't just swallow some stuff, because you will be upset later on, for sure. And it's so, so sad when I see people who have kind of spiritual trauma, you know, because they were not discerning in what they want to do. Tantra is an amazing journey. It's a crazy journey. I had such a colorful life due to this journey that I am on. Also triggering, also shocking, also beautiful, all of that. But I really stand with confidence on this path, because I have always engaged myself very seriously with what I want and with what is good for me, right? And sometimes my family had to suffer because of that. And sometimes my teachers had to suffer because of that. But I know that this is my path and that this is what is good for me. And I really, really encourage all of you, if you really take the spiritual journey seriously, you will have to do this. This is the key element. Stand on your path, walk with confidence. Do it with all your heart.
Thank you, Blondine, for those words. I will put all the information about this retreat here, Mahasiddha Yoga. We are next to Chiang Mai in the north of Thailand. It's a beautiful place. It's beyond words. It's so spectacular. And the teaching here is so amazing. Thank you. Thank you, Blondine.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Spiritualista. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I love doing it. If you like this English episode, this English version of Spiritualista, please rate with 5 stars on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. I would love to read my first English comments on these apps. Take care of your energy, your vibration, and let's spread love. Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.